I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the two property tax referenda affecting the Indianapolis public schools. The referenda focus on teacher pay and building maintenance and improvement. My guests are IPS Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the two property tax referenda that are going to be affecting the Indianapolis public schools. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Indianapolis Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. So welcome to all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And I think probably we ought to start first by talking about what these referenda are, what we are asking of the voters. I'll start with Dr. Farabee on that one.
So first thing I want to note is that these requests will be at the top of the ballot, and so easy to find for our residents that will be voting on November 6th. And there's two questions. One is for capital improvements. The second is a operating referendum that is solely dedicated to employee compensation with a focus on our teachers. On the capital side, I'm requesting $52 million. $40 million of that approximately is for safety and security advancements, and we want to ensure our campuses are safe and secure for our staff and students. About $10 million of that is for facility updates that are urgent at this time. Many of our buildings are aging. Average age of an Indianapolis public school building is about 1955. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to keep our buildings up to date. And we're requesting $220 million of operating dollars, which will be allocated across eight calendar years. And again, that is for, again, compensation for our employees.
So, Denny, talk with me a little bit about how this would affect the individual taxpayer in the affected area.
Well, again, I don't know the exact numbers because we look at it on a statewide basis, mm-hmm. rather than looking at a specific school districts, how much the impact will be. But again, the school districts always provide that. That's the key thing that the taxpayer want to know, and what the landowners want to know is how much is this going to be the impact to me, whether they have children in school or not. So, but the key is that it will have an impact on their property taxes, because this is where this money is coming from, is from property tax purposes. But we've been doing referendums for a lot of years, and again, they've kind of come and gone, but now we're seeing more and more that are passing. I think probably because there's a need out there that again, the public is seeing as well as the school districts. So as far as – but I can't give anything specific. I'm sure Dr. Farabee could give you that.
I'm happy to do so. Yeah. So the average – homeowner will see an increase of about $3.19 per month for both the capital and operating referendum. Obviously, if your assessed value is lower, that number would be lower than the average. And if your home value is higher than the average, it would be higher than that. But great point made about, you know, referendums becoming the new normal for public school systems across the state, as we're seeing the need to be more competitive with compensation as the teacher shortage is heightened each year. And then also just to ensure that we're filling in the gaps from property tax caps, which contribute a lot to the operations and the capital improvements that occur in school corporations.
And I should point out that there is an interactive map, actually, that shows how your property taxes will be affected at wfyi.org/news. We're also going to post that link straight on our Facebook page if you want to go there, and you can find that, our Facebook page at No Limits WFYI. So, Tamara, how did we get to this new normal?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with those property tax caps and other limiting factors that we have for local government revenues, such as the maximum levy. And so schools can only raise, or any local government can only raise so much, raise their levy that they're bringing in from property tax by so much every year. So if they're at that maximum levy, even if they're adding assessed value, they're not necessarily able to raise more revenues. It really, an added assessed value would just lower the tax rate. At the same time, especially in incorporated places where the tax rate is above $2, you're starting to see some tax cap losses for those local government units. And so that referendum that people are voting on is above and beyond the property tax cap.
So I'm going to stay with you for a second, Tamara, on this. We probably ought to talk about the property tax caps, how they came into being. For those of us who have been in this state for a while, we remember what a firestorm that was about a decade ago. But there are many, many people who weren't here when that happened. So could you walk through the background?
Sure.
On that?
So the election day that we voted those into the Constitution, I had a baby the next day. So that
you really remember that
day well.
I really remember that constitutional amendment. But in 2010, we did vote those property tax caps into the Constitution. And what those are is it's a 1% cap on your property tax bill for homeowners, a 2% for any other residential homes, so those could be apartments or second homes, vacation homes, and farmland, and a 3% cap on business and other property. And so that cap is on your gross assessed value. Your tax bill is actually calculated on your net assessed value. So it's not a straight one-for-one with whatever your tax rate may be. So just something to keep in mind.
So with these caps in place, that obviously limited school systems' ability to meet needs and all of that. With these referenda, Denny, you're calling it the new normal. I mean, roughly how many school systems have we seen that are doing this or have done it?
Well, again, this year I believe there are 12 different referendums that are going on. In May, there were 8, I believe, all 8 passed. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing more and more of this. And I think the tax caps have a big part of that. I think the concept of how schools are funded, where again, the main emphasis there is money following the child. Mm-hmm. So if you're declining in enrollment, you get less dollars. And so sometimes, of course, when you lose students, it's all not in the same class, so you can't start eliminating staff or buildings. So it takes a while for that to really kick in. So the bottom line is there's other factors here that I think school districts are looking at and just trying to keep the status quo. And I believe Dr. Farabee also hit it on the line, right on the line, because of the issue dealing with teacher and the teacher shortage. And they're always looking. And so if you can provide a few more dollars for a teacher, they may come to you. Let's say a physics teacher or a special education teacher, which are a lot of those you just can't find anymore.
Mm-hmm. Superintendent Farabee, could you talk a little bit about the process that led IPS to decide to go to the referendum? What was the thinking?
So a couple of things of mine. One is we wanted to ensure that we were as fiscally strong and represent stewardship that would build the credibility for this type of request. And so the last time IPS has had a request has been about 10 years ago. And during that time period of 2008, it was really what I called an air conditioning and HVAC referendum, because it was during a time period where most IPS schools didn't have air conditioning. Since that time period, we've been hit, as I said earlier, with property tax caps. If you go back 10 years ago, that's about $10 million less annually that we see. We've seen less state funding per pupil. So it's important to note IPS is one of those school districts where our enrollment has actually been stable, and we've seen an uptick most recently in the 17-18 school year. And so we have just seen less dollars and less revenue come in. And so as a result, we're getting about $40 million less if we think about federal funds that have been reduced, state funding that has been reduced for some urban school districts, and then the hit of the property tax caps. And so over the last 5 years, we've done a lot of work to be as efficient as we can be with the resources we have. Again, we thought that was really important before we came to the public and the community and asked for a property tax increase. And so I can give many examples, but I mean, we right-sized our central services, which is 30% less than where we were, you know, 5 years ago. We've sold enormous amount of properties here that you can see redevelopment across the city, putting more dollars on the tax roll. And we closed some schools, and it was particularly tough. You know, we cut our number of high schools in half, which is a challenge to do. And so there are many examples that I could point to where we were really strategic and intentional about leveraging the resources we do have for better student outcomes. And, you know, 10 years ago when we had our last referendum, about 47% of our students were graduating on time, prepared for college and career. Our last class that we have data on in 2018, that number was about 83%. And so we believe that this is a strong investment in a corporation that is moving in the right direction. And we want to ensure we stay on the path of raising teacher compensation.
What will be the impact? I'll stay with you, Superintendent Farrapy. What will be the impact if it fails?
Yeah, I'll go back. So, you know, during the Great Recession, we about a half a decade of frozen teacher salaries. Mm-hmm. And so over the last 5 years, we've invested about $20 million in salaries and benefits to increase compensation. We expect from this to at least maintain inflationary increases for our teachers. So that's about 2% annually. This will also allow us, again, on the capital side, to improve our facilities, but also add hardening to our windows and doors, emergency communications, lighting for the morning and evenings so our campuses are well lit and safer for students and staff. So we can anticipate to be more competitive on the teacher compensation side. And, you know, the thing that I think people should know about teacher compensation is if you account for inflation, you know, our teachers are making less than teachers made two decades ago. And so we're really struggling with teacher compensation. So this is really important for us to at least maintain inflationary increases.
This is Tamara. I can see a dynamic since really what's happened here with the property tax caps and what's going on is that these decisions have been shifted back to the local level. And people have to decide in each community how much they want to invest in their school system. In the best case, that means people take ownership and they build really great school systems everywhere in the state. It also, though, can be a dynamic where poor communities fall further behind. How concerned are you about that, and what can we do about it?
Well, I think that is a concern, and you know, we've had just a lot more referenda in the last 10 years. And so we've kind of been watching those. And from 2008 to 2011, only 42% passed. Here in recent years, in the last four elections, we've had 89% pass. So there's only been four losses out of 38. And last May was a complete sweep. Every single one of the school referenda passed. So it's going to be interesting going forward. And there's a couple of schools that I'll be watching, we'll be watching particularly closely. And honestly, one of the places where that's been an issue has been Lake County. It's definitely true. A higher per capita income, we've seen, you know, more passes for school districts with a higher per capita income.
Yeah, if I'm correct with the numbers that Dr. Farrapy threw out, we're looking at about, on average, about $40 a year mm-hmm. in increased taxes. $40 a year in a place where the median household income is $120,000 a year or something like that is not a big sacrifice. Places where it's $28,000 a year, that's a much larger proportionate sacrifice. Is there any way to even out those disparities? And that's a tough question. We've got just a little bit of time. You want some time to think about it, and we'll pick it up on the break?
That sounds great.
All right, we'll do that. We are talking about the two IPS property tax referenda that are going to be on the ballot. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are IPS Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the two property tax referenda affecting the Indianapolis public schools. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are IPS Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. Okay, before we went to the break, I tossed you a really tough question, Tamara. And basically what I was trying to get at, is there any way to even out disparities that could occur? I mean, if communities, not to put too fine a point, if communities either can't afford the upgrades that people who live there can't or choose not to, it ultimately is the kids who live there who get punished at some level. And in theory, that's not the way under the Indiana Constitution things are supposed to work in regard to education. Is there anything we can do about it?
Well, so I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. While referenda tend to pass in school districts where there's a higher per capita income in the population, it also helps to have a high number of rentals. And so sometimes you may have a lower per capita income, but a higher number of rentals means voters that are maybe willing to vote for that referenda, even though they may see it in increased rents, they don't necessarily see that direct immediate impact like a property owner would. It also, if you have a higher percentage of business taxable assessed value, that can help. And so that's something that's maybe working in favor of places like IPS or metropolitan areas. But I think that, it really comes down to property taxes are just part of our school funding. We also get a large portion of school funding from state aid. And, I'd love to hear what the two panelists have to say about the state aid formula, but I think it's really important on a state level that we get that formula right and that we recognize some of these disparities that referenda could cause.
Okay. Denny, I'm going to throw it to you too, because you whispered to me during the break. You said, that's a really tough question. So I'm going to give you a shot at it.
Well, again, and I agree with Tamara, the problem here, especially when you look at the property tax caps, is that the reason some, again, only 90 school districts, a third of the school districts, are really impacted by that. That becomes a problem. And that's because, again, they have low assessed valuation, or they're basically all at the 1% mm-hmm. level, so therefore they're not getting anything extra, so they're suburban. Mm-hmm. Housing is all they have, or they have a lot of debt. And so you see a lot of the districts who are really impacted by the circuit breaker are suburban school districts that, again, don't have a lot of assessed valuation but have a lot of debt, and they probably basically all have homes. Now, that's one part. Now, again, for IPS, again, part of it is assessed valuation issue. And of course, when you're in a metropolitan area, you have so many rebates or
tax TIFs, incentives.
Tax incentives, exactly. Yeah. That comes into play. That you get no taxes off of them.
Used a more accurate term the first time.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Probably what I was thinking.
Honesty, but it's
a challenge for a school district to generate that, to do the things. They cannot change the Constitution. They really are not the ones growing assessed valuation, and eventually they will pay down their debt, but that takes time.
So let me – I mean, you know, the part of the politics, and everybody's been too polite to say this, with property tax caps came because there was firestorm over a lawsuit challenging the way property taxes were assessed here in the state. And at the time, there was intense, political pressure on the legislature to do something, which was odd. They were somewhat insulated. The first public officials to trot out after that that wave hit were the mayors, and they got wiped out like, a combine moving through a wheat field, basically, and all of that. And this property tax cap was kind of pushed through as a response to that. Do you think anyone intended or realized that this could be some of the consequences of that? I'll start with you on that, Denny.
I think they realized, meaning the General Assembly and I think the administration at the time, that there would be some harm to public schools. And the reason I say that, because that next year there were dollars, approximately $50 million, put in the state budget to again deal with the loss of circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. And only for schools, not for other units of government. So there was a knowledge of that. They thought that might go away.
But $50 million, it sounds like only solves all by itself would only solve a little bit more than one-fifth of Superintendent Farabee's problem.
Yeah, at the time it was yeah. Again, but that was what was in the budget at the time. So, but then when we had the Great Recession, that was taken out.
Yeah.
And so those dollars were gone, and now we have a procedure that school districts can then utilize a waiver to kind of look at their tax credits differently, but it still does not generate new money. It just keeps you where you're at, and so it's still a major challenge to those 90 school districts, and some are impacted just in this area, such as Franklin Township, Beech Grove, are unbelievably impacted by the caps.
We have gotten a question from a listener named Alex via Twitter, and if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Alex writes, should Superintendent Farabee be asking for money when he still plans to close more schools? Why not explain how many more he plans to close, and why close community schools like Broad Ripple when that clearly is of major interest to voucher schools? So there are actually three questions there, Dr. Farabee. Yes.
So, the question about closure is, it's going back to the comment I made earlier about fiscal stewardship. Mm-hmm. If you have excess space and, we maintain a building portfolio for, 80,000 students and we only have 30,000 students, we're not leveraging our resources to produce positive outcomes in a smart way. And so, I am well aware that our public school institutions are, important to our neighborhoods. It's not like closing, grocery stores and when the marshes are gone, we just move on. When you close public schools, it does have an impact on the community, and they are important institutions to our neighborhoods. But we just simply could not operate with the excess space and facilities that we had. And as a result of reducing our footprint with facilities, we've been able to save significant dollars and push those dollars into the classrooms. And we'll continue to need to do that. What we've said in terms around additional closures is, our referendum request shifted from, $900 million now to close to $300 million. And as a result, there's still approximately $400 million that we are looking to save in partnership with the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce. And that will be a continued effort of thinking about how we manage the facilities that we have in a smart way. And it's just something that we have to do. I mean, it's just like the other challenges that we experience in the city where we've got abandoned housing. We just don't have the population that we had decades ago. And we just got to make some tough decisions about how we leverage what we do have today.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the two Indianapolis Public School property tax referenda. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Or do what a listener named George has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. George, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to make a comment that, in general, I support the idea of managing the funding of the schools through referenda rather than having a less limited structure. I lived for an area, for a time in an area where the property taxes had run basically unchecked and ran up to, you know, four or five times the level that we see here in Indianapolis. And, you know, that gets to the point where it drives people out. And this process gives people at least a feeling of more control of, you know, being able to vote to fund the school system when they feel that it's actually needed and appropriate, rather than the people who are spending the money having control over that process. So in general, I agree with that. It can be a problem in some areas. And in this instance, it sounds like Dr. Farabee has done laudable work in trying to make do with the funds that they have and decrease the financial obligations of the district. I am aware that this time last year, he got a significant bonus, and I think that was probably reflective of those efforts. And I'm glad that that didn't happen at this time this year, because that might have kind of sounded hollow, asking for more money. But in general, I would say that Dr. Farabee seems to have been doing a good job, and that this is an appropriate way to run the system. And I agree.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, George.
John, can I point out?
Certainly.
IPS has two referenda on the ballot, and Dr. Farabee kind of talked at the beginning. One of those is a capital improvements, and one is a general tax levy, which is going to go towards teacher compensation. So there are two different type of referenda, and there are two more in the listening area this November. So Noblesville has a general tax levy referenda of 37 cents. And when I say 37 cents, that's 37 cents per $100 net assessed value. And then Clark Pleasant School Corporation in Johnson County also has a general tax referenda of 10 cents per $100 assessed value.
We have an email question from a listener named Meg. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Meg writes, what percentage of the funds earmarked for compensation is specifically for teachers as opposed to administrators and non-teaching staff? Superintendent Farabee, I think everybody's looking in your direction on that one, so I think that's one you get.
Yeah, thank you. So 100% of what we're requesting will go towards maintaining what we've been able to accomplish with our collective bargaining for teachers and their salaries, and the remaining requests will go towards those inflationary increases that we just described earlier. So this is truly primarily focused on our teachers. However, when I say teachers, when we collective bargain for teachers, that includes other certified staff, which includes counselors, media specialists, social workers. So all of those groups are included in that collective bargain agreement.
We also have a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air called in. And again, our phone number is 866-476-3881. This listener says, can the referendum exempt people living on fixed income or Social Security? Denny, you're the one shaking your head.
No, unfortunately, if you are a property tax owner, and wherever the referendum, wherever the school district is, and you live within that school district, it's for everybody. There is no partitioning out of certain individuals.
So let me ask this, Tamara, but I want to springboard because you said
it.
Go ahead, Dr.
I do want to follow up. I think there's an important note that we go back to, I think Danny referred to the rebates, I said the tax incentive, however you see those, it's important for the public to know that when those incentives exist, this referendum is outside of those incentives. And so there may be some people today that aren't paying property taxes, businesses, organizations that have incentives, all are required to pay. And so I think that's important to know. Not only we think about those that may be challenged with paying it, but also those that may have the resources to pay taxes that aren't necessarily paying them today.
Tamara, you mentioned earlier in the program that there were, you know, since there have been four referenda that failed. Well, and I'm kind of curious.
Four in the last four elections.
Yeah. That whether there was a profile there that they all fit, and whether this is part of it, because I know, at least in the old days, historically, communities that had a lot, an older population whose kids were out of school and often were on fixed incomes or so living off Social Security, were less inclined to sink money into the school system and to vote in favor.
Sure. Well, and, you know, you have a vested interest when your kid is in that school, even though schools for our communities really provide an important service for all people, whether you have school-aged children or not. I don't have the four losses right in front of me, who they were, and kind of be able to look at some of those criteria. But some of the things that we know make it more likely for a referenda to pass is like I said before, the per capita income in that school district, if it's higher than a certain amount, then it's more likely to pass. The share of taxable assessed value that is business. So if that's higher, it's more likely to pass. Also, school districts that are under 1,000 students. And I think this goes back. It is really tough to close schools. And so, Dr.
Can you repeat that again, please?
It is really, really tough to close schools. I go into a rural community and they'll talk about how when they lost their school, you know, it just wrecked the community. And I'll be like, oh, how long ago was that? 1964. Like, we're still talking about it today. So I think when you have under 1,000 students, it's a little more close-knit community. People are maybe more touched by the school, have maybe lived there their lives. And they might have that threat of having to consolidate into a bigger school district, which I think makes them more likely. Also, if the referenda rate is under 25 cents, so that tends to help them pass. High average SAT scores, and we're seeing more and more of this. If they've tried to pass a referenda before, they're more likely to pass. And if they've tried and won, they are a lot more likely to pass.
So let me ask this, Superintendent Farabee, because it'd be the next one. It sounds like as long as these property taxes are in place, and it doesn't look like there's an easy way to remove them at this point, this problem isn't likely to go away. If this if these two referenda pass, how long do they solve the problem for IPS?
So their 8-year referendum, the operating dollars are, and you know, there are several school districts here in Marion County, Indianapolis, that are on their second one, so they've had to renew and come back. So I go back to, you know, the work that we need to do around realizing additional savings. If we come up short, we could likely need to renew or come back for additional resources. It's important to community to know that you can't have two parallel operating referendum, but you can't have more than two. So that's a possibility. And we're also, you know, counting on, you know, relatively generous state funding. And so if we continue to see increases in state funding, that would help us and eliminate the need to make additional requests. But if it goes in the opposite direction, we may be back at this table sooner than what we would like or anticipate.
We are talking about the property tax referenda that would affect the Indianapolis Public Schools today on No Limits. My guests are Indianapolis Public School Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the two property tax referenda affecting the Indianapolis public schools. My guests are IPS Superintendent Dr. Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Andrew has done and reach out to us via Facebook. Find us there at No Limits WFYI. Andrew writes, I grew up in Deerfield, Illinois. The property taxes at the time were close to $10,000. At the same time, the schools were some of the top schools in the country, and the teachers were probably some of the most well-paid teachers in the country. I don't see Indianapolis or Indiana getting high taxes like that. However, I feel that when schools have more money, they can provide better education and, more importantly, better services to students and families. And if that costs me an extra $40 a year, I'm all for it. Probably ought to talk, Tamara, about the community impact, too, of being in a school system that is perceived not to be thriving.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, I mentioned one of the things that we found is higher average SAT scores make it easier to pass that referendum. And so I think that could be an issue for schools that maybe aren't thriving, and it kind of becomes a secular issue. Maybe they don't have enough money to compensate teachers well, to have that extra help for students. And maybe it's a, you know, in a higher poverty area, you may be getting students that are less prepared for school or have other factors that are making it harder for them to strive in school. And so that definitely could be an issue. And I think that that's something that we have to keep in mind. I mentioned that earlier, you know, with state aid and so forth, that property taxes aren't the only funding for schools. And so we may need to keep some of those equity things in mind as we look at our school system as a state.
We are talking about the property tax referenda that would affect the Indianapolis public schools. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Bill has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes. First of all, hello to all the guests on your show. I have a question to I believe, if I'm not correct, closing some schools can help the community because you got, you know, property the way it is. I mean, let's face it, Broad Ripple, I mean, it's going to be for some kind of investor, it's going to be very profitable for them to, like a developer to do well with that property. Same thing, say, for example, if you look at Arsenal Tech, that's another gold mine over there. If they close that property too, that school could bring in some revenues as well. I mean, it's close to downtown metro in downtown. And then it's really kind of hard to find good teachers.
Mm-hmm.
if you don't have the salaries there. I mean, let's face it, if you're going to pay, you know, X amount of dollars for being a teacher and you got to deal with the teacher parenting the children and all the ridicule they get for the things they do, the discipline and everything, it'd be easier to go into like just another profession and they paying you just the same or more. So it'd be less headache.
So, thanks very much for the call, Bill.
You're welcome.
Superintendent Farabee.
So go back to our closures. I mean, the caller is spot on in that we have been really intentional about the value proposition of the closures and ensuring that any building that is closed is redeveloped. And in many cases, again, that puts additional revenue back in the city, additional dollars on the tax roll. I think about buildings that were not necessarily school buildings, but a big part of our footprint. One example would be the old Coca-Cola bottling plant on the Mass Ave corridor now that's being redeveloped. That will be huge for the city in the downtown core. I also think about a number of schools. You know, there's I think two schools that are now senior living facilities. We've had some schools redevelop as apartment complexes. I mean, so there are a number of ways that the facilities can be repurposed and have value and meaning for the community. And I'd rather have that scenario than having a school building that's at, you know, 25% utilization and covering the energy costs and the operating costs to keep the building open. So, that has been for us in many cases a better financial case than what we have done in the past. The caller is so right about the teacher shortage and the need to pay teachers well. And this is just not a IPS issue. This is an issue across the state. This is an issue across the nation. And the caller is right. I mean, we've seen a 30% decline in the state of Indiana of people getting into teacher education programs. There are less and less people interested in the profession, and we think that has a lot to do with the compensation. And so we just got to do better there.
And I read Bill's first comments or questions a little differently, I think. As he was saying that there is an economic impact when a school closes in a neighborhood, and I think that's based on, as most realtors will tell you, one of the first questions prospective home buyers ask is, how are the schools here? If the answer is there is no school here, that's not a good thing. Are there ways we can work to minimize those kinds of impacts? I'm going with Tamara because she made the mistake of making eye contact while I was asking the question.
Yeah, I can tell. I should have looked away.
Yeah.
So I think that Dr. Farabee hit on an important point when you're talking about a neighborhood. You know, how far are they having to travel to the next school? Does it dramatically increase the travel time for kids to school, or is there really one that is close by? My kids, if they were on the bus in our school district, would be on the bus for an hour and 15 minutes in the morning. So I'm guessing that...
Yeah, we have no ride over over that time period, not that long.
I watch the bus go by almost as I get up, and I'm, you know. So I think that's one aspect. It does hurt communities, especially rural communities, because you don't, you know, you are looking at busing kids to a neighboring town or whatnot. But we have to look at the mix of services and the mix of institutions that are in our community. And to Dr. Farabee's point, I think that there are ways that you can repurpose some of these old buildings. And if IPS has been thoughtful in working to redevelop those sites, then that's really a benefit to the community versus having a building stand still.
We are talking about the referenda affecting IPS. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Tony has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tony, you're on the air.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm a retired superintendent in Indiana. I give a shout out to Denny. This is Tony Lux.
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, Tony.
I'm passing through Indy listening to this show, and I'd like to suggest to the public that they realize with this great conversation that's going on that the property tax system of funding schools is the primary cause of inequity, financial inequity, and academic inequality in the state of Indiana. I did not hear the beginning of the show, but the fact that some communities can only collect 40, 50%, 60% of their property taxes, and there is no remedy for replacing that except to transfer general fund dollars per student to pay for transportation or pay for debt, lowering the income for schools to provide education in terms of salaries, teaching staff, better academic programs, and curricular choices. And I think the public needs to realize that the state is really abdicating its responsibilities for financial equity in the state. And another thing that has been touched on is the reduction in complexity index funding for school systems that serve the neediest students. And when you realize that, that they've shifted more money towards wealthier communities and then only put in referendum where they're more likely to be passed in wealthy communities, you realize that it really is an abdication of responsibility for rural and urban schools. And I'll allow the, you know, go ahead with the panel to comment on that.
Thanks very much for the call, Tony. It sounds like you know what you're talking about. Denny, since he referenced you, I'm going to give you the first crack. But thanks very much for the call, Tony.
Well, again, going back to one of the points that Tony had was the equity. As I mentioned, only one-third of the school districts are impacted by a loss of 10% or more as far as the circuit breaker. And so the other two-thirds, you know, I always tell them just be happy that it doesn't impact you. They don't have that issue. So that is an issue that's out there, but it's never been dealt with.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but they're not being affected now. Does that mean they never will be, or is it just a question that eventually more and more of these school systems are going to be?
Well, I think where we're going to see it, if we do, and I think there will be some different districts that will be impacted down the road, will be in the rural areas. With the assessed valuation for farmland going down, that will then force some of them, again, just by the nature of, as I mentioned before, loss of assessed valuation is one of the factors on property tax caps, that will be put into that position. So I expect more and more rural districts to be in that situation down the road, unless there's something done as far as leveling out the assessed valuation for farmland.
Tamara, you were smiling when I asked that question. I'm going to give you a crack at it, too.
Well, so I think, you know, when you look at the per capita or the per pupil assessed value in some of those rural districts, it is really high because you're dividing it among a smaller set of people. And farmland up until a few years ago was really dramatically increasing in its assessed value. That has stopped, and farmland has definitely been going down, and there's some losses. But I think it also comes to a question of growth and decline. It is really hard to be a fast-growing school district, and it's really hard to be a declining school district. So as you lose population and enrollment, that takes away some of your state aid that's based on enrollment, and then it also is decreasing your assessed value. And so you're kind of hit by on both sides, both decreased state aid and decreased property tax revenue. At the same time, growing and building new school buildings is also really, really difficult. And, you know, where we see rural areas that also include a couple of incorporated areas that would have that higher tax rate that are growing quickly. I think about I grew up in Hendricks County. And so if we look at the school rates in some of those areas in Hendricks County, they have very high school tax rates. And that's partially because they're constantly building new buildings and having to deal with a very quick influx of students.
I have a question from a listener named Susan who writes that she wants to know about the issue regarding the transit tax, whether that will impact whether or not people will vote for the IPS referenda. Superintendent Farabee, was it something you folks even thought about or worried about? Or
We did. Yeah, I do want to go back and just thank Tony. Tony hit a lot of points. You can tell that he's very knowledgeable. And, you know, the issue of complexity dollars is huge for school districts like IPS because our enrollment has been stable, but we have less state funding because those complexity dollars have been redirected to the foundational dollars that increase funding for surrounding school districts. Going back to the transit, it was a consideration. Also, any increase was a consideration that households would have to take on. So we thought about, you know, the utilities. You know, Families will be asked to pay more potentially for heating and gas and electric bills. We have other needs that need to be addressed in our community. But we just firmly believe that the public school system is the heartbeat of our vitality. And we have to have a strong public school system here in the city. And I can't think of any other issue that will have a significant influence on property values and our ability to attract business and continue our economic development. And so we weighed that. We also weighed the tax burden, which is why we're at a much lower number than we were previously. And so we have balanced the notion of there are additional expenses that families will have to take on.
Gotten a question from a listener named Wendy via Facebook. Again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Wendy writes, what about proper planning when closing IPS schools? Since high schools have closed, Arsenal Tech does not have enough guidance counselors to help guide all of our students, especially our seniors who are preparing for college and careers. Even at this late date in the semester, some students are not enrolled in the classes they need to take. Additionally, SAT and ACT tests are abysmal. Money being diverted to charter and innovation schools is seriously taking away funding from IPS public schools. Superintendent Farabee, that sounds like one you need.
Yeah, so a lot of misinformation. So we actually have more counseling support than we've ever had before in our high school. Thanks to a grant from the Lilly Endowment, we have a separate suite of counseling focused on college and career at all of our four high schools. And not only are these counseling services available to current students, they're also available to graduates of IPS as well. So all of our high schools have these suites. They're called the Future Centers. And I agree there's a need for counseling. And this is one of the examples that we have to support our students across the district. So glad I got an opportunity to clarify that issue.
Is there, with this, I mean, if these referenda do not pass, I mean, what are? I'm not going to ask Superintendent Farabee on that because I already asked him that one earlier in the program. But Denny and Tamara, what options remain for a school system like IPS?
Well, there really aren't very many. That's why they were seeing more and more referendums. And again, the next step would be cuts. And again, we are a people business. School corporations
are. So it comes to personnel.
Therefore, it's a personnel. So it would be a personnel cut, and unfortunately.
Tamara.
Well, and they can try for a referenda again. And so or referendum. So we have seen that where a school corporation has not passed a referendum initially, and they kind of go back and rework the plan and go out there and get their message out there, and it ends up passing.
That'll have to be the last word. I feel like we could spend at least another 2 hours on this. I'd like to thank my guests, IPS Superintendent Louis Farabee, Denny Kosterison with the Indiana Association of School Business Officials, and Tamara Ogle with Purdue University for what's been a lively conversation about the IPS referenda. Also like to thank our listeners for, as usual, some great questions and comments. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.